to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, Brains.
Coming to you straight from San Diego, California, let's welcome our host, April Mahoney.
Hello, Brains, and welcome back to On the Edge. Today I have a great, compelling testimony of a husband and wife, Annalyn and Raymond Scott. They're going to talk about living with and beyond kidney disease. Raymond Scott has been living with kidney disease for over 20 years. He has been on dialysis and has also had a kidney transplant. He and his wife, Annalyn, have now written a book and are the founders of One in Nine, Changing the Trajectory of Kidney Disease. Chronic kidney disease affects about 26 million Americans. That is one in every nine adults, and most don't even realize it. The leading cause of kidney disease is diabetes and high blood pressure, or having a family history of these conditions. There are 83,000 people on the waiting list for kidney transplant, and one person dies every 2 hours while waiting for a kidney transplant. Brains, I really want you to pay close attention to this because high blood pressure is running rampant, as well as diabetes. I want you to hear Raymond's story and how he is living this life and how he is being challenged by it, but he is still thriving. Welcome them to the edge. Good morning, Annalyn and Raymond.
Good morning.
Good morning, April.
Thank you so much for being open enough to share this with my brains and awakening the world to what's going on, because it is trying, and people don't really realize the challenges that people go through on a day-to-day basis. They don't realize that they're sick. They deny it. They don't want to go and get the treatment. So, Raymond, can you tell us a little bit about your journey and how you got diagnosed and where you are now?
Yes. Well, first of all, I have to give honor to God, and I have to thank my wife for her tenacity in us fighting this disease. But for me, it started, I went to urgent care after being coaxed by my then-girlfriend. That cough doesn't sound good. You might need to go get that checked out. So when I went to urgent care, I had the intention of going and getting some antibiotics and going to work. So the nurse took me back, took my blood pressure, took it again on a machine, and then she took it again manually. She said, wait here, and ran back and got the doctor. The doctor came out and said, Mr. Scott, do you have a headache or any tightness in your chest or anything? I said, no. And I said, all I have is this cough. And he said, well, your blood pressure is, 190 over...
270
over 190. Now, the normal range is 120 over 80.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, okay, well, let me get a couple of pills. And he was like, no, you need to go to the hospital. We just called an ambulance to take you to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
So by the time I got to the hospital, I was 300 over 200. And I can remember the doctor coming in after I did blood work and urine work saying, Mr. Scott, your kidneys have failed.
Wow.
So then I could see his lips moving, but I didn't understand a word he was saying, because in my mind I was like, man, how long do I have to live? What is going to happen to me? What is going to become of me? And then he finally got my attention, and he said, well, we're going to have to start dialysis on you immediately. So we set you up for surgery to put a catheter in so that they could get the blood in and out and clean it. So I'm actually on the spot getting educated about kidney disease. So for my kidneys failing, it was high blood pressure that caused my kidneys to fail, or uncontrolled. Mm. Now, understand that I had just gotten out of the military maybe a year. I think this was a year after I got out of the military. And I, to myself, I was 10 foot tall and bulletproof, and nothing
right.
would take me down. Still exercising, still active, and all of a sudden you get a diagnosis like this, and your first instinct is to think, oh, man, what? How long do I have to live? So my wife, my then girlfriend, came to pick me up from the hospital, and the first thing I said to her is, listen, I think you're too young for this, and I'm going to head back to, I'm from Charleston, South Carolina. I'm going to head back to Charleston to live. And she said, no, I think you're a good man, and I'd like you to stay. I wouldn't leave you during this. And I tell you, that lifted such a burden off my chest, but I had to give her an out. And, I mean, God be the glory, he put the right person in my life that would show me that through hard work, dedication, and stick-to-itiveness is what she showed me. I had to match that and surpass it. So that has made me the dialysis patient today, no longer surviving on dialysis, but thriving on dialysis. My intention is not to be a good dialysis patient, but the best that they've ever seen.
Well, you know, it started with a cough. That is totally
yeah.
out of the realm of what people would think, you know, and blood pressure. Let me tell you something.
Right.
I'm speaking to the minorities, black folks and Asians and Hispanics. We are quick to get our blood pressure not checked and not take the blood pressure medicine. You better watch it, because the blood pressure is key in figuring out what's going on and filtering and monitoring the blood. When someone tells you that you have high blood pressure, be sure that you get it regularly checked and take your medicine. And men, don't ignore this. You hear Raymond was a stud, just retired from the military, you know, tall and strong. He had a cough and then goes in and finds out that he's got kidney disease. So moving forward, you get this diagnosis. You are on dialysis. Tell me, when you started to take dialysis, what was that like for you? What ran through your mind? Because I know that it's more than a notion.
Well, I can say that patients or people out there who have high blood pressure, who have diabetes, they should visit a dialysis clinic, and that would change their life. To see what they're headed to or towards would scare them into doing what they need to do. Because for me, when they started hooking up the lines and I see my own blood come out of my body and go into that machine, it was revealing of, and it reminded me of the things that I could have done in the past but didn't, the things that could have happened in the past. Like when I was in the military, my kidneys were actually degrading while I was in the military, but no one bothered to tell me. I was actually at stage 3 kidney disease while I was in the military.
Wow.
And it's shown in my medical records, which a doctor a year or two ago went over with us and asked me, Mr. Scott, did they tell you when you were in the military that your kidney function was degrading? And I was like, no, they didn't say a word. And believe me, when you get out of the military, you then do an extensive physical, and they do everything. I mean, check for cancer, everything.
Mm-hmm.
And the topic never came up. It never came up. But that first time I did dialysis, it was hauntingly revealing of the things that I didn't do in the past that I should have.
And you know, I have a family member that has had their come to Jesus meeting, and they said, you know what, I'm not going to do dialysis. At this point in my life, it is more about care than it is about cure. There is a lot. They wanted to put the fistula in their arm so that they could prepare them that, you know, in case they needed to do dialysis in the emergency, that they didn't have to search for a vein and that type of thing. So tell us a little bit about what goes on when you have to get dialysis. Now, from what I understand, you know, it's 2-3 times a week, Sometimes people can do it in their home. Other times they need to go to outside clinics to get it done. You know, it just really, every vein in your body they're going to end up using. And also the fact that most people on dialysis don't urinate. Can you explain some of that to us as well?
Yes. Initially, when I first got out of the hospital, I started on peritoneal dialysis. Peritoneal dialysis is basically putting the dialysate in your peritoneum, which is in the abdomen. It's a cavity. And through osmosis, the waste product and fluids are removed. And I did that for 3 years. So you basically either do 8 hours while you sleep dialysis, or you can do exchanges during the day where you take the fluid out and put fresh fluid in. And then you have hemodialysis, which is blood. Hemo is blood. So in-center hemodialysis, I did 3 days a week. I was 4 hours each treatment. Now, hemodialysis, because you're doing it 3 days a week, you have that lag time in which you gain weight, in which when you do dialysis, your body responds, and it's really hard on your heart also. So you're drained once you come off of that. Then you have home hemodialysis using the next stage device, and that's what I do now. And with this dialysis, I do it 5 days a week, but not 4 hours, 2.5, 2 hours and 45 minutes. And this has been, this is one of the advances in dialysis, and more frequent dialysis is better on a patient, even though it may seem cumbersome that you're doing it 5 days a week, five or six. There are even some patients who do it 7 by their own choice because they feel so good afterwards. And my energy level and all that has eclipsed with what I was doing when I was on in-center hemodialysis. So, and you have transplant. I had a transplant. Now, the thing about transplants is some patients we met, it lasted 3 months. Some patients, with me, it lasted 5 years. But in the last 3 years, I was in chronic rejection. So they knew it was going to fail. They just didn't know when. And then one day I went into the hospital sick, and they were like, you got to start dialysis again. But you have patients, it lasts 25. We met one lady, it lasted her 35 years, and she's still coming. So with my experience with transplant, I like better being on next stage 5 days a week. My wife and I can do it when we want to. That's time-wise, because we've done it early in the morning. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. We were going to Italy, so we did dialysis before we left. Got on a plane, and I did in-center dialysis in Italy. But everyone has that niche which fits them, and most people think that transplant is an end-all, be-all. But there's difficulties you can go through with transplant, too. Not discouraging people to getting transplants, because it's a blessing. The 5 years I had mine, and I got mine from my brother, it was a blessing.
I know, and it is. And I didn't really realize the procedure. I did another show to my coworkers. One of them went into the office and saw the other one in distress, asked her what was wrong. She says, I've been diagnosed that with kidney disease and I need a transplant. The other one said, well, I have two. You want one? I couldn't believe that. She waited 8 years because there was complications with the patient getting her prepared for the transplant, and the other coworker waited 8 years. She was about 20 years her senior, and she gave her kidney, and so they are living happily ever after now. There's a lot of emotion tied to that because you are now connected with that person, and that is really a sacrifice. I didn't realize that they kept both kidneys inside, that they can do it laparoscopically. It's not a big incision, a big cut that you would think that they do it, and then they take the new kidney and they stitch it in, and the old kidney is there. Is that pretty much how it works?
Yes, that's how it works, and I have all three, my two original kidneys and my transplanted kidney, inside of me. Yes.
Wow. And so inside your heart, you have aniline. Aniline, we want to talk to you because you are my Shiro, baby. Yes, you are. Number one, you showed unconditional love in sickness and in health, and you were the girlfriend, okay? You did not leave his side. You have been with him. You've married him. You are now his wife and the mother to his children, his biggest advocate and supporter. Please tell my brains a little bit about your experience, what you felt, and why you hung in there.
Well, you know, April, truth be told, he timed it pretty well. We'd only been dating for 3 months. And like he said, you know, I was only 23 at the time. He was 29. But his kidneys failed a week after Valentine's Day. And remember, Raymond just told you he's from Charleston. I'm here from, you know, we live in Phoenix. And he said, don't worry about anything, babe. I'm going to make dinner for Valentine's Day. You know, he busted out with he did a London broil, candied yams, homemade macaroni and cheese, and collard greens. And I said, oh, I already know he's a good man, but he can cook too. Oh, my goodness. Because I was surviving on, like, you know, masticholi and Prego and cold cereal. I have many talents, but in the kitchen is not one of them. So, you know, and so, but I knew that he had good qualities. He was a good, solid man. And so when this came about, neither one of us were really that familiar with kidney disease or what dialysis meant. But we decided, you know, just I said, well, there's no need for you to leave. I'm not going to leave you because of this. Let's just take one step at a time. Let's see where our relationship is going to go from here. And that's really what's happened through our entire relationship. So less than a year later, we were married. So now he's celebrating 21 years of life. And when we're celebrating this past January, we celebrated 20 years of marriage. And through all of that, there's been a lot of twists and turns. And, you know, we just continue to lock arms and say we just need to keep taking one step forward, keep moving. And, you know, over the years, we've seen miracle after miracle. And I was like, okay, babe, God really has you here for a reason. And this platform of what we're doing to make a difference is it to, so really to even speak to Raymond's character, which I recognized back then, you know, look at all these years that have now passed and all of the things that he's had to go through. And he said, you know what, babe, if this was my purpose to be able to not just survive, but thrive and to be able to turn around and help other people to avoid this, then I'd be willing to go back and do it all over again.
Wow, wow. Tell me what this looks like day-to-day, snapshot, you being a wife, being a mother, being a supporter of your husband, and also a facilitator of helping him with his dialysis treatment. What is the impact that this has on a family?
You know, it definitely is a family affair. It's something that, you know, our children don't know any different, right? And so it's just part of life, and it is life. So dialysis does give him life. And so we, again, just kind of take everything in stride, and we look at what's going to be best for him. It's funny, our children are 14 and 11, and our 11-year-old, I tell you, Brooklyn is going on 20, but they know things that most adults don't know. So she's been in public settings where an adult might say something about diabetes, and she'll stop them and go, you know, diabetes is the leading cause of kidney disease. And they're amazed, you know, the knowledge that they have. And so, you know, it's just part of our routine. You know, we just work around things. And you know, I'm grateful that, you know, I have the ability to have a flexible schedule. I don't have a nursing background. In fact, my background is in IT sales. But I'm so grateful that I traded one hat of being a solution provider in IT to now being being a solution provider to save lives and to impact my husband's life. And so, again, this is just our journey. And there's been a lot of sacrifices. There's been a lot of blessings. And I really kind of, you know, echo what Raymond said. And I'm grateful that our past, you know, our purpose and destiny have intertwined to be able to do the things that we're doing. You know, we've had the opportunity of traveling across the country. We're filming a documentary, and also, you know, had our children go with us, and so they were able to travel across the country with us on a 35-foot RV, doing Raymond's
wow.
dialysis treatment on that. So yes, there's sacrifices, but then we also, there's so many blessings and things that we get to experience that maybe other people don't get to. So this is just life for us.
Well, it is a life. We're going to talk about your foundation and your book in just a minute. But before we touch on that, I want to talk about some of the advances that you have seen over this 20-year journey with kidney disease. I am a strong proponent of stem cell research. I believe in gene therapy, and it's just a lot going on. What are some of the advances that you have seen in the treatment of kidney disease?
You know, it's interesting because if you look at other diseases, there's been a lot of money poured into it, and there really has been a lack of funding around kidney disease. So the actual dialysis machine has not changed much over the past 40 years. But thankfully, because of newer technology and things where they have put into advances to make some of the machines smaller, like what we have, to be able to do the dialysis from home, a unit, it's not tiny, it's about 75 pounds, but that's still something we can travel with if we need to. That
right.
has made a huge difference. But we're seeing, you know, and again, I'm a big believer in regenerative medicine. So
right.
we on our tour, we got to go to Washington University and Dr. Ben Humphrey's lab and look through, even our children got to look through the microscope and see little kidney organoids that they're growing from human stem cells, from a patient's own stem cells.
Mm-hmm.
And they're only about the size of tapioca right now, right? So that's not
right.
to implant, you know, to transplant. But he said, yeah, maybe we're about a decade off. That's not that far away to be
no,
able
not.
To, you know, to potentially grow your own kidney. We also, on our West Coast tour, had the opportunity to meet with Dr. Shubo Roy at UCSF, part of the Kidney Project, which is a collaboration between UCSF and Vanderbilt University. And Dr. Shubo Roy, he's an engineer. And so there, he's taking his engineering experience and then working with the team from, you know, on the medical side to build a bioartificial kidney that was printed with a 3D printer that we got a hold
wow.
of in our hands.
What?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, it's incredible. And that's still, so just to be clear to the audience, that's still in, they're going into clinical trials. They're in clinical trials, but they still haven't gone into human trials. They're still needing more funding for it as well. But can you imagine, you know, being able to have this bioartificial kidney where you don't need to have anti-rejection medication? So there's other advancements, you know, other things that we've been able to experience with some medical breakthroughs in the microvascular field that have helped Raymond tremendously. That we'll be sharing with others too, and we share about it in the book as well. But, you know, that have helped him reverse some conditions, that have helped him improve his vasculature in multiple ways. And so I believe, April, that, you know, we're just seeing the tip of the iceberg. So the status quo, it really needs to be shaken up. You know, we need to do better. We need to have more options. We need to, you know, first and foremost, let's find some of these regenerative solutions. Let's find some of these things that we can help people
right.
keep their kidneys going. Let's do that first and foremost. And then
Absolutely.
You know what? It, let people know, guess what? Kidney failure and dialysis does not need to be a death sentence. But let's bring some other options so that you know, again, whether it's going to be, you know, Raymond being able to grow his own kidney, get a bioartificial, or whatever else the future holds, April, I know without a shadow of a doubt, Raymond's not going to have to be on dialysis his entire life. And he will have functioning kidney or kidneys that are working that he won't need to be on anti-rejection medication. And I claim that not just for him. I claim that for the millions of people around the world that have been praying for answers and praying for solutions for themselves and for their family and friends as well.
I know, and from your lips to God's ears, absolutely. I'm a believer, too. I'm a strong proponent of science. I love science. I have been at some of the greatest laboratories here in San Diego, UCSD. I've been able to look in that microscope. You know, I wanted to be a scientist once upon a time, but I'm too extroverted. Girls sitting there looking at all that little bits and bites and stuff swirling in there would drive me crazy. I wouldn't feel like I was accomplishing anything. Talking about accomplishments, let me ask you this before I ask the next question. Children that are on dialysis. Now, I know some children now that have type 1 diabetes where they have to have, you know, a pump on them to create this. And I know that it's not diabetes that you're dealing with, but that is a contributing factor. Do you think also that can also wear on their kidneys as they grow older?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Because you look at diabetes being the leading cause. And so let me address your question a couple different ways, starting off with there are, many children that are on dialysis because of various reasons. Maybe it's, you know, they were born with, and maybe there was some sort of genetic defect, or there were some other, you know, complications where maybe the kidney didn't grow properly, or they're having problems with their, just other issues that contributed to it. So we've known, in fact, we've met several children who were born that, you know, just, you know, needed to start on therapy to help. And so that's pretty delicate, you know, to look at these children. We've also, I talked to a mom whose son was, I think he was around 9 or 11 years old, and he was on dialysis because of strep throat. And they didn't get it. So the strep throat caused the kidney failure. So there's a lot of different things that can cause it. But yes, we see, you know, if you're looking at juvenile diabetics and you're seeing the type 1 and you're seeing things over time, I want to share with you, there was, so obviously we're still working on the documentary where we haven't completed it, but I'm going to share one of the interviews that we did on the road. We stopped and interviewed Raymond's cousin, JJ, when we were in Baltimore, Maryland. And JJ has had, he was a juvenile diabetic. He was diagnosed at, I think around 11 years old. And, you know, he was told at that time, he said, you know what, it's, you know, this is what you're going to have to deal with, but you're okay. You're still in that honeymoon phase. You know, you can still be a kid. You can still have, you know, birthday cake, and you can still do that. You're in this honeymoon phase. You're not going to really have to deal with the complications of it until you're an adult. Oh, okay. Well, that kind of sent a message to him. It's not as serious. And, oh, if I want this or I want that, I just need to give myself an extra shot. I can just take extra insulin. Well, fast forward, the effects of that, you know, he had some complications with, you know, vasculature and you know, had to have a toe amputated, problems with his eyesight, had problems with his kidneys, and obviously he ended up on dialysis. And then, thank God, he was able to have a kidney pancreas transplant, which has been, you know, a major gift for him. But he shared something with me, April, that just really stands out. And I heard his voice when you were asking the question. What he said was, I wish the doctors, if I could rewind to when I was a kid, I wish that they could just be straight up with me and just tell me what this was and what it was, because how critical it can be, not to scare him, but to show him the severity, because he took that as honeymoon phase. But if he could have been more educated and been more disciplined from a child on up, he could have probably avoided what I just described to you. And
wow.
So I think there needs to be more education at every level.
It does need to be education, and we need to take it serious, because the kidneys, they filter the blood and the urine, and they dispel the waste. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yeah.
And
so for Raymond, Raymond doesn't even urinate. So
yeah, that's what I heard. A lot of
that.
People that are on. And I mean this in the most respectful way. Do you defecate? Do you poop?
Yes, I do. I do. I just don't urinate, and when we run into people and they hear that I don't urinate, it amazes them, you know, that the one function that they took for granted their whole life, that I took for granted my whole life, I no longer do.
My brother had my brother-in-law had severe diabetes to the point where they went to they amputated a toe, they amputated a couple fingers, this and the other, and they came to him one day and they said, "Now we have to amputate your penis." And about 3 days later, he died. He said, "You know what?" He says, "I need to leave with some dignity." And so diabetes and high blood pressure and kidney disease will take you out. Everybody's worried about the big C word and cancer, and, you know, there's a lot of autoimmune disease. There's just a lot of stuff going on. Diet and exercise is paramount. Watch what you're eating. Try to eat less meat. If you look at the animal kingdom, you will see that the strongest, most beautiful animals are vegetarians, and they only eat other animals that are vegetarians. They don't eat a lot of meat. I mean, look at the silverback gorilla, one of the strongest animals there. And I had a tour behind the scenes at the zoo, and he was absolutely gorgeous, ate nothing but fruits and vegetables. So, brains, think about what you're putting in your body and how that is working. Let's jump forward before our interview runs out, because I want everybody to hear about your book, One in Nine, the documentary, and your foundation. You want to take us on that journey, Annalyn?
Absolutely, absolutely. So, again, you know, this comes from our journey, and One in Nine, our foundation, is to the three key pillars are to raise awareness, help with prevention, and regenerative medicine. So our mission is to change the trajectory of kidney disease. So we're here to create hope and change. And so through that, you know, we do multiple events where we're speaking with people in the community. Obviously, we're still filming our documentary, which we're, you know, I kind of put a pin in it for a little bit while we wrote our book. And now we're gearing things back up. We're in fundraising mode so that we can get out and make a bigger impact and reach more people. The book that we just launched in March is One in Nine Tribes, Kidney Disease Warriors Beating the Drum of Hope and Change. And I'm really proud of this book because, you know, it takes a lot of the highlights from our journey. It's a compilation book. So we weave our story and Raymond's story throughout the entire book. But even our children are now co-authors. They have their own chapters speaking from their perspective and how it's impacted them. We have other co-authors that, you know, have either donated kidneys, have had kidney disease. We have doctors. We have some incredible stories of advancement in regenerative medicine and microvascular health and really some missing link, puzzle pieces to the, pieces to this puzzle that are going to make a huge difference. And, I remember Raymond saying when we published it, he said, "Wow, I really wish I had a book like this 21 years ago." Wow. I said, "No, I wish you would have had it 25 years ago because maybe you could have prevented some of this." But that's what we can do for others is give some of this knowledge, not having to wait till they're going through it. And so again, that's really our mission is getting out there and meeting people in a fun and interesting way. We're talking about going back. Let me hit that statistic of one in nine. So again, if 90%, there's 90% of the people that have kidney disease that don't know it. That's unacceptable to me. So we got to reach that 90%, but then we also have to reach the people that are at risk that don't have kidney disease, don't have it yet, but maybe have a family history. And just in general, think about the things we can do to turn this around and not just impact kidney disease, but diabetes, heart disease, high blood pressure, because that's all interconnected. And so, you know, changing the trajectory for communities, for families, for these individuals. And so we encourage.
And also looking at research to see if, you know, if people are predisposed to kidney disease or diabetes and working on it from that perspective, because there is now specialized medicines. You know, you just got to have the money and the health care. That's a whole nother story. That's a whole nother show to be able to be eligible for those type of things. But you know what? If we pull our resources together, if we donate, be it a kidney, be it blood, be it dollars, don't be afraid to donate your dollars, brains. You never know whose child you're going to be helping. You never know how you might be helping yourself This is just not about just any old thing. This is about changing everything. Tell my brains how to get in contact with you, Annalyn and Raymond, and how they can donate to your cause.
Absolutely. So you can certainly donate to our cause on our website, 1in9, so that's the number 1in, the number 9kidneychallenge.com. You can also follow us on Facebook at 1in9kidneychallenge. Like our page, follow us, because you're going to see a lot more. You can certainly purchase our book on Amazon. It's under 1in9tribe. But also, I want to share with your brains today, April. I'm really, really excited because we are launching a 1in9tribe book club, and this is something we've got ambassadors throughout the country. We've got people around the world, and
That's
so we're going to create these. They have these book clubs all over the world, and you know, we already have some key cities that we're starting with, but we're going to be taking, you know, some live events that we're going to be doing. We're going to be live streaming some things as well, but then also getting out into the community. We're launching our 1in9 triple threat basketball tournament. It's a 3-on-3 basketball tournament to combat kidney disease, diabetes, and heart disease. So stay tuned, brains, because we just may be coming to one of your cities.
Absolutely. And so I'm going to keep your link on my page. I'm going to encourage my brains to do everything that they can do. If you are, you know, if you've expired and passed away, donate an organ if it is still functioning. If you have the ability and the strength and the health to donate it while you're living, be a blessing to someone. Donate with your dollars and your finance. Trust me, you may not be able to get another kidney, but you can get you some more money. Love on people. Understand them. Try to get an education. Work with scientists. If there's clinical trials, donate some blood. Get involved, people. This is our species. This is our world, okay? This is our planet. You are on the edge, and we want you to live and to thrive. Thank you so much, Raymond, for sharing your story. And Annalyn, I hold you in light. You are on my blessing and my prayer list every single day because you are warriors and you are thrivers, and you are a man of honor. Thank you so much again for being here on the edge. Rain, go back. Listen to other edgy conversations. Everything ain't this heavy now. We got some comedians. We got some jazz. We got some fun, entertaining stuff as well. But we want you to take everything that we offer you seriously. Thanks again, guys, for being on the edge. Come back and visit me, all right?
Thank you so much, April. It was
a pleasure.
God bless you.
All right. Bye, brains.